From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzette Grolot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and welcome to Worldviews. Rebecca Cruz and I talk about the ethical issues of China's use of prisoners for organ transplants. The country says the practice has ended, but doctors and NGOs question whether or not that's true. We'll also discuss political strife in South Africa.
There is very high unemployment, political controversies all over the place, as well as some infighting amongst party officials.
And later I'm joined by former Oklahoma City television journalist Ariel Reshef. Earlier in her career, she spent several years working for the Israeli Broadcasting Authority.
There are definitely drawbacks sometimes to, you know, certain stories that we do. And I have more of a feeling of fear sometimes in the stories that we cover here in Oklahoma than I sometimes did in Israel. And I think it's just a very different sense of personal security.
We'll revisit her 2013 conversation later this half hour. But first, the news. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grolot. Rebecca Cruz, we're back in the studio together, and let's talk about South Africa today. Interesting story about some of the politics coming out of South Africa. Seems to be a bit of a political shakeup with the ANC, the African National Congress Party, potentially losing power. Now, this is the party of Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela, of course, has now passed away, but there's a lot of criticism of this party. It was the party, for the black population in South Africa, but now other challenging parties are suggesting that it's corrupt and that, you know, the elections will bear out that they'll have a hard time keeping power in South Africa. So what are some of the issues here? What are they dealing with?
Well, yes, there's the elections across the country. So these aren't the elections for the presidency. They are in a parliamentary system. So these are kind of the regional elections that are taking place. And it looks like they have lost Johannesburg. So obviously a very significant, very large city. They're trying to form a coalition government there. But the second place finishers in the election. They were the first place finishers. They didn't get 50%. They need to form a coalition. The second place finishers are not going to form a coalition with them and, in fact, are talking about creating a minority government so they could be completely pushed out, which is a big deal. This is a turnaround from 2014 when there were the elections for president, the national elections, and 62.2% in 2014 supported the ANC. Across the country, this has gone down to 54.5%, so a decrease across the country. They still have some strongholds in the rural populations, but they really are losing out in the major cities and the urban areas. And what's going on is that there is very high unemployment, 27% recorded, so we can assume that it's actually a little bit higher. Political controversies all over the place, including issues with President Zuma and some of the choices that he's made, as well as some infighting amongst party officials. I think the other thing that you point out is, yes, this is the party of Nelson Mandela. He's now been dead for a couple of years, unfortunately. But he's been out of politics for a while as well. And the new parties that are coming up, one in particular, the Economic Freedom Fighters, have come up in 2013 and 14 and have started wielding some power. They claim to kind of be Marxists, revolutionaries. They wear red berets even. They have started to get more and more support, and they are appealing to the youth in the country who no longer feel this tie to Mandela or a tie to that apartheid past or a loyalty to the party that came about after apartheid and saved their country, if you will, or as you know, led them onto the right path. So a lot is going on there.
Well, to be fair, I mean, the political system in South Africa is quite confusing. It's a divided nation, really. You've got multiple capital cities. The branches of government are spread out across the country. I mean, it's an odd situation already. So this isn't just your typical kind of party against party, you know, parliamentary discussion. I mean, there are larger implications and again, legacies of colonialism and legacies of the apartheid era that they're still struggling with, perhaps.
Absolutely. They have this check on power. But yeah, they have three capitals and they have separated their judiciary, their executive and their legislative into these three capitals as kind of a compromise when they restructured in the 1990s. So that is an interesting component as well, for sure.
All right. So another issue, this is a bit troubling, something many people don't talk about, but this issue of transplants, organ harvesting and transplants. Now, the International Transplant Conference has been slated to be held in Hong Kong. This has come out to be quite controversial because the Chinese government, of course, Hong Kong is part of China now, once it left Great Britain, was returned to China. many years ago, China has been known to harvest organs from executed prisoners. And that even though they said that they stopped this practice in 2015, there's still some question as to whether they do this or not. And so there is a real, I guess, controversy and debate about whether China is the place to hold this type of discussion. So this plays into this larger issue, though, of organ donation, organ harvesting, and organ trafficking. I mean, we've seen stories coming out of Egypt, elsewhere in the Middle East, where migrants and other prisoners have been unethically put under the knife to harvest their organs. So this is a much greater issue that goes beyond Hong Kong and China. And this issue, it's a global one.
Absolutely. And it wasn't, at least until 2015, illegal for China to do what it was doing. That was part of their policy. Hong Kong has had their own policies. But the issue here is that they are part of China and that the conference is taking place there and that there will be doctors there from China who are going to be delivering papers. So it's felt that in doing this, they're giving legitimacy to the Chinese doctors when we don't have confirmation that this practice of using prisoners' organs has actually ended, though, of course, they're claiming that it has. But you're absolutely right. There is the legal usage of organs, and each country has their own rules and regulations on this. And then, of course, there is the trafficked or the illegal usage of organs, because we're talking about people that are very, very desperate in most cases. And really, this also highlights the inequalities of the world, that those in the West, in Western Europe, in the United States, that need an organ and can't get one legally, because even when there is a system of voluntary organ donation, which there is, it's very hard to get organs, matches, all that sort of stuff. But where can you get people to give organs or to take organs? It's underdeveloped countries, people that are desperate. And so, yes, the refugee situation, we're hearing a lot about that. Just this month, a trafficker was apprehended and said that he had been involved in selling refugees for $15,000, primarily to folks in Egypt. So Egypt continues to be involved in this. Their organs are then taken. In most cases, maybe they're taking a kidney, something along those lines. In a good medical situation, those people would survive, but they're obviously not going to get the care that they need. So a very complex, depressing, and troubling story.
And one that's very invisible to us, again, because of these differences around the world. All right, Rebecca, well, thanks again, as always, for your analysis.
Thank you.
We'd love to hear your thoughts about this show or answer any questions you may have. Send us a tweet at WorldviewsKGOU, or you can contact me directly at Suzette Grolot. Coming up, we're going to hear my 2013 conversation with Oklahoma City television journalist Ariel Reshef. She spent the early part of her career reporting and anchoring English language news for the Israeli Broadcasting Authority. I'm Suzette Grolot. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grolot. In 2012, Oklahoma City native Ariel Reshef returned to her hometown after spending nearly half a decade living and working in Israel. She earned a master's degree in diplomacy and conflict studies and then started her career as a journalist with the Israeli Broadcasting Authority. 2 weeks ago, she announced she's leaving the station to pursue other opportunities, so we decided to rebroadcast our 2013 conversation with her. Ariel Reshef, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. You are from Oklahoma, and so you have your roots here. But you've traveled quite a bit. You've lived overseas, studied in another state, and ended up in Israel, of all places, and doing journalism. Give us a little bit of background about how you went from growing up in Oklahoma City to anchoring the news in Israel.
It's been quite a journey. First, I graduated from Heritage Hall here in Oklahoma and then decided that I wanted an experience out of state at a state college at Indiana University. And so I started my degree program there and went through a series of majors. Couldn't quite decide what I wanted to do, all from operatic performance to fashion design to this and that. And I finally landed on political science and Jewish history. And so I pursued those very vigorously. And I guess the political science aspect led me to international relations. And I think probably every student can relate to the fact that they have a professor here and there that really touches them and really inspires them. And that was the case for me. That was Dr. Dina Speckler. And she encouraged me to pursue the path of international affairs. And so I became very passionate, even more passionate than I already was, about that course. So I ended up TAing a course in international affairs and then deciding to study abroad in Tel Aviv. And that was really, you know, I have traveled to Israel throughout my whole life. My father is Israeli. So I'm very familiar with the region as a tourist. But when you study abroad, you get a more intimate look at the people, at the region, at the complexities that face people there. And I just wanted more. So once I was finished with my study abroad program, I came back, finished my senior year at Indiana, and decided that I wanted to go to D.C. and work for a nonprofit there. For 3.5 years, and found that I wanted to have an abroad experience. And luckily, at the time, my boyfriend, then fiance, then now husband, also shared that vision. So we moved to Israel. I applied for the program in diplomacy and conflict studies at the Interdisciplinary Center in Herzliya, and really gravitated towards the classes there and felt that I was getting a firsthand look at the conflict and also just at the people involved. And also the one of the remarkable things about my college there was that the professors were practitioners in their fields of expertise. So not only were they teaching courses, but they were actually out in the field doing what they were teaching. So we got a really amazing firsthand look at all of the different aspects of the conflict and of conflict resolution. Fast forward into the journalism field, and I call this...
That's quite a leap. So you
it's
had,
quite a leap.
Fact, you had one, an amazing experience, but then to leap from that experience into journalism, how does that happen?
So I come from a very non-traditional background in journalism, and I never expected that I would become a journalist, but I finished my degree at the Interdisciplinary Center, and that very same day, we used to watch a program called IBA News, which was the only English broadcast in Israel. So it's diplomatic affairs, it's economic affairs, sports, everything you can imagine about Israeli society, but it's told in English. And it, like I said, it's the only broadcast. So my family was actually visiting Israel, and we were all watching the broadcast. And it was my very last day at the IDC, and I was still trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And they made a kind of a joke on the program about how they were looking for new anchors. So they started listing criteria, one of them being that you're an Israeli citizen, an American citizen, that you have a background in international affairs, and of course that you have, most importantly, on-camera presence. Well, my family turns around to me and they say, well, it doesn't really matter that you don't have the on-camera presence part because we think you can do it, so you should apply for this job.
Well, that's an amazing thing in terms of luck and timing. You just happen to hear this announcement.
Exactly.
And there you go.
I call it my serendipitous twist of fate. Yeah. So I very reluctantly at the time listened to my husband, my father, and my mother, who all told me I should apply for this job, and blindly sent my CV to the people that were reading. And at first, they sent me back a note, very lovely note, saying, we really appreciate your experience. We think you have the right experience. However, you have no on-camera experience whatsoever, so no thank you. Well, so I accepted that, and my husband said, absolutely not. You don't take no for an answer. Send them an email and say you can't say no until you at least meet with me. So I sent that email also very reluctantly, and finally I found out that it pays off because my then the chief anchor there that was making the decisions called me in for a group audition. I came in with a series of other journalists who had far more experience than I did and read blind from the teleprompter for the first time in my entire life at that audition. And the very next day I got a call from our news director telling me he wanted to hire me. Which was pretty remarkable. I thought he might have misread the when he was going down the list of journalists that they had interviewed. I thought maybe he had looked at the wrong phone number and called me up instead of someone else. But I was, needless to say, extremely shocked and excited. And that started my career.
My guest is Ariel Reshef, the former morning news anchor and a reporter for KOCO Channel 5 in Oklahoma City. More of our 2013 conversation right after this break. I'm Suzette Grelot, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews on KGOU. I'm Suzette Grelot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. I'm speaking with Ariel Reshef, the weekend evening anchor and a reporter for KOCO Channel 5 in Oklahoma City. She returned to her home state in November after spending several years working for the Israeli Broadcasting Authority. When we left off, she described her non-traditional entry into the field after earning her master's degree in diplomacy and conflict studies. You've reported all over Israel. You've engaged in meeting all kinds of interesting people and topics. Tell us a little bit about some of the most interesting things you did while you were reporting in Israel.
Well, very relevant to, of course, the course of events that we're seeing now in the Middle East. I was there when the what has now been dubbed the Arab Spring began. So I saw all of these convulsions in the Arab world and all of the different political aspirations of the people in the Arab world. So that was absolutely fascinating. I actually anchored the broadcast where Hosni Mubarak was ousted, and that was a tremendous experience. You know, growing up reading the history of Israel, the history of Egypt, the history of the relations between the two, it was an incredibly important topic for the people that were tuning into my broadcast to hear about Hosni Mubarak being deposed, and that comes with a lot of weight. So that was one of my, I think, highlights of my experience. I also was up in the north of Israel during the Gilad Shalit exchange deal, and had to see both the positive and negative sides of that exchange deal. 1,027 Palestinian prisoners were released in exchange for just one Israeli soldier. So I saw the jubilation in Gilad Shalit's hometown, but then the pain on the faces of the families who had lost loved ones in various suicide bombing attacks or terrorist attacks at the Supreme Court arguing against that deal. And then also the elation on the Palestinian side to see their family members come and return home to them. So that's a very, very complex topic that I felt very privileged to have a window into. And I also interviewed some very notable people like President Shimon Peres, who is a stalwart in the Middle East in terms of political action and peace-seeking efforts. And so that was fascinating to me, no matter where you stand on the issues that surround the region. He's one of the key players there. Also, Jabil Rajoub, who is an active Palestinian authority, or was then active in the Palestinian Authority, talking to actresses like Sarah Silverman, who come for their first time to Israel, and having a little bit of a laugh with them about their experience. A very diverse spectrum of people that I had interviewed there.
So, an amazing experience then you've had, not only just that background and then career and the movement into journalism, but certainly in Israel, an absolutely fascinating place. And our listeners will know that I've recently visited Israel, and we've reported on it quite often here on Worldviews. But so now that you're back in Oklahoma, what, if anything, you know, can you draw from that experience? I mean, you really, you know, as you said, entered into journalism in kind of a very unusual or non-traditional way, getting your start in journalism in a foreign country, and then bringing it back here to Oklahoma, your hometown, and how you capitalize on some of those skills and the training and the experiences you have. I mean, you're not necessarily interviewing people like Shimon Peres right here in Oklahoma City, but what is it that you could say is very similar, or what are some of the things that transfer easily from being a journalist in Israel, and maybe what are some of the differences?
Well, I would say yes, I'm not interviewing Shimon Peres on a regular basis here in Oklahoma, but every single person that I interview here in Oklahoma is just as important to me. And it's important that any journalist remember that no matter whether you're interviewing a head of state or a farmer who's having trouble with his crop or someone who's just lost a son or a daughter, it's just as important to maintain your humanity and your integrity no matter who you're interviewing. So one of the things that we have discussed previously before this interview was the aspect of storytelling. And storytelling really to me is the same whether you're doing it in Israel or you're doing it in Egypt or you're doing it in Syria or you're doing it in Oklahoma. And the people that you meet along the way are those who are highlighted in the stories that you tell. And it's important that you can find commonality with their narrative no matter who they are and from what walk of life they come from.
Well, I think one of the things that you're really touching on there, Ariel, is that, and you've experienced yourself, is that we're all humans and that we all have our stories to tell. And so regardless of whether you're telling stories about what's going on in Israel or in Oklahoma or any other part of the world, you know, everyone has their stories. And so is that, do you think, I mean, given your experience, that that's really what journalists even do for us, is help us make those connections?
Absolutely. I think the task of being a journalist is one that I take extremely seriously because it gives us a window into people's most intimate moments, their most intimate thoughts. And I witnessed many times as a journalist, but also as a human being when I was in Israel, interactions between Israelis and Palestinians on a regular basis that were incredibly friendly, incredibly loving. Some of my Israeli friends had Palestinian friends as their very best friends. And watching those interactions, you think to yourself, how can it be that this is such an intractable conflict when the people at their very core can find a way to get along on a regular basis? So I think, you know, one of the tasks of a journalist is to bring the humanity and the human aspect of the people that we're talking about, not just the conflict. When we talk about the conflict, we see on various news networks the images of conflict in the region, especially when you're talking about the Middle East. And sometimes it gives us a bit of a warped perspective about what actually happens on a regular basis. You know, when I show people a picture of Tel Aviv, they're shocked because they don't realize that it's a beach town with discos and, you know, with lots of fabulous restaurants and seaside experiences, really active, vibrant gay community, something that you would never really notice. And so that was something that was really compelling to me. And it really transcends all of the different conflicts that occur in the world, that there's just amazing human stories to tell, whether it's on the Israeli side, the Palestinian side, or it's Oklahomans right here that are dealing with issues.
Well, something I find interesting, too, is the issue, particularly for journalists, because journalists put themselves in harm's way often. And I mean, even in Oklahoma, journalists are getting out there and they're telling the stories of tornadoes, you know, as they're you know, nearby. Journalists all over the country that put themselves in harm's way. Journalists, obviously, you know, in Israel and elsewhere, and now in the Middle East and Egypt, you know, that are losing their lives, in fact. So, I mean, what are the comparisons you might make along those lines? And what are some of the safety issues that you faced in Israel versus some of the safety? I mean, I know they're different. Circumstances are different, but still they're there, right?
Right. Absolutely. And I think that's a very important issue to touch on. When I was in Israel, I reported twice from the Gaza border when there was an instance of cross-border violence. So there were Katyusha rockets and various sorts coming towards Israel, and Israel was launching operations on the other side of the border. And I was standing just next to an Iron Dome missile defense system that was deploying actively. And you know, getting rid of those rockets that were coming towards Israel. Never once in Israel did I feel unsafe. And I know that may sound very strange, but I think as a journalist, you get yourself into a mindset where it's so important for you to tell the story in that moment that you don't want to be reckless by any stretch of the imagination, but that you really want to try to focus on what you're doing. And it helps. It's almost a coping mechanism. It helps us sort of drown out the sounds around us. And so I think that was one thing that I was able to do during that instance of violence. On a daily basis, I have to say, and this is one of those things that people kind of look at me dumbfounded when I say this, when I would walk the streets of Tel Aviv as a female by myself at 2 a.m, I felt incredibly safe. I never had my purse snatched. I never was mugged. I never worried about a drive-by shooting. And, you know, I'm not saying that Oklahoma is a violent place by any stretch, because I absolutely love this place. But there are definitely drawbacks sometimes to, you know, certain stories that we do. And I have more of a feeling of fear sometimes in the stories that we cover here in Oklahoma than I sometimes did in Israel. And I think it's just a very different sense of personal security and a very different sense of where we are in the world.
Well, I think that's definitely a reminder to us that journalists, in bringing that sense of humanity and bringing that sense of, you know, telling the stories of different human beings around the world, that they do so sometimes at their own personal risk, no matter where they are. So we appreciate the work that you do. We thank you for being with us. Hopefully this hasn't been a very dangerous experience here on Worldviews
today. No, it's been a pleasure. Absolutely a pleasure.
But thank you so much for joining us on Worldviews, Ariel Reshef.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to my 2013 conversation with Ariel Reshef, a television journalist and the former weekday morning news anchor for KOCO Channel 5 in Oklahoma City. She left the station earlier this month. You can see a slideshow of her reporting in Israel on our website, kgou.org. Worldviews is a production of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies through a collaborative partnership with KGOU. Brian Hardzinski and Sam Dupre produced the show, and Hillary Gibson prepared the research for this interview. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Grolot.